Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2. We basically made it through almost all of this chapter. I did want to just spend just a minute on the last verse of chapter 2. So let's go in the text there to verse 15 and notice what's written. Paul writes, "Yet she will be saved through childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control." Very interesting phrase here at the end, one that perplexes many when they study it. Again, one of those that's kind of difficult to interpret exactly what he means. A few different things I've read on it, different way people have looked at this. But just to set the context, what's he talking about here? Overall, what's the context? Not an interpretation of this particular verse, but what's he been discussing? Yes, ma'am.
One was deceived.
Mm-hmm.
They go see him, but one was under deceived, so that the man is
covered. Yeah. And so the bigger context is he's been discussing gender roles within the church and how they're to be conducted and how the man is to take the lead and women are to be in subjection to that authority. And so, again, he bases that truth on a couple different things. Number one, he goes back to the created order and then also to the sin in the garden. All right, so let's go to verse 15. A lot of kind of consternation has been given to the term she. Can you believe that? But there has. How do you properly interpret that? That's one of the words. A second word that receives a lot of attention is the word saved. Anyone have a different translation of that? In verse 15, 1 Timothy 2:15, it says, "Yet she will be saved through childbearing." Anybody have a different translation? Go ahead.
I have preserved.
Preserved. Preserved. Anybody different? Anything different than preserved or saved? Yes, ma'am.
This is the first time I've ever read this translation, but it sort of, in my brain, seems to fit. Is it okay if I read it before it says? This is the living Bible.
Yeah, go ahead.
It says, so God, 14, "And it was not Adam who was fooled by Satan, but Eve, and sin was the result. So God sent pain and suffering to women when their children are born, but he will save their souls if they trust in him, living quiet, good, and loving lives."
Okay. So that translation, it's obvious from it, if you study it, it has a particular view of that text that it comes out procurely. So let me hold that for just a second. Let me talk about these terms and we'll come back to interpretation of the text, because there are some different ways that people look at this. So let me just real quickly go back to these terms. So number one, she. Number two, saved or preserved. Now, and then the other one would be this, the they, in later in the verse when it says if they, and then continue. So those are four terms that really set the precedent of what kind of interpretation is being done. Okay, so let's look at each of them. The word she there. Anybody have something different than she? Does anybody have the woman?
Yes.
Some of y'all have the woman. The English Standard has she. And that, again, gets to the dynamics of translation here. Why are they interpreted differently? Well, it's because the term that's used has a variety of interpretation to it. And so what we have to think about is which of those terms would fit best and with the particular context. So, If we do it the woman, what might you interpret that to mean? That just the use of the woman, who would that refer to? Who is the woman, if that's the proper translation? Okay. Eve. Eve is one way of interpreting it. And if you look at the context, he just talked about Eve, right? So that's one way to look at it. You might think of a different way to look at that term.
Maybe all women?
Okay. To the female gender in general, right? All females there to come afterwards. Okay, that's a different way. And depending on how you're going to utilize that term, it can change kind of how you interpret it a little bit. Now, let me say this before we get too far into it. Nothing of this has anything to do with salvation issues, right? So no matter which way you decide to go in interpreting this, it really has no effect on the rest of text. It's just, you're just trying to figure out exactly what is Paul saying here, okay? So that's the first kind of stump, if you will, to uncovering this text. All right, let's look at the second term, saved. All right, here you got another term that has some wide meaning. Saved or preserved. How do those two terms contrast with each other?
To preserve something is to, it's almost to keep something that is already.
Okay, good.
In
yeah.
its natural state.
It's like to hold something, right? You're preserving it. I'm trying to maintain it in its state. Okay? We add preservatives to things, don't we? Why do we add preservatives? Because we're going to maintain its freshness and its flavor, right? So how does that contrast with saved?
Saved typically indicates a change.
Okay, change. So you're going from one state of being to another. That's good. I like that. What else would saved imply? It implies intervention, right? That something intervened into the situation, right? I was in a bad condition and something intervened to pull me out. Good, all right? So that term, which way do we interpret it? Is it saved? Is it better thought of in this way we were talking about it was saved? Or is it better thought of as preserved? Okay, I'm going to try to tie all this back together at the end. So let me just work through each word. All right, then the they, okay? The they, who are the they? So if you're doing your biblical interpretation, you're just looking at the text, who do you think is being referred to by they? And you, feel free to answer. Nobody's going to get on to you. So. Okay, so you're going back to the general use of women in general, right? They as a species will be saved, okay?
Saved humanity.
Humanity at large, okay? Broader sense, okay? What do y'all think, they?
Isn't this whole section any talking about Adam and Eve?
If it could be, and that's the way some interpret it, right? That they then would be referred to Adam and Eve in that sense. So you see how you start to get a lot of different interpretations. The other interpretation might be their children, the offspring. Right? So that gives you another little tweak on how you exactly look at this. Anybody else? Anything else you see there? All right, so I think that gives us a spectrum on they. So could be varied interpretation. And then continue in faith. So if I tie that continue back to the word saved or preserved, it'll help give me meaning to continue. So anybody have a different word than continue? Do all the translations say if they continue? That seems to be the general consensus, right? That it is an ongoing process. It's not a one-time act, right? The word continue implies what?
There's something in motion.
Yeah, what's what?
It implies there's something already in motion.
Something in motion, right? And it continue, it's moving along, right? So, four important words. We'll come back to faith, love, and holiness in a few minutes. But let's just think about, I think the key to interpret this is getting those four terms in the proper place. So now, let's talk about how you would interpret this depending on your translation of she. Okay, now, if you say she at the beginning of the verse is Eve, what would this imply about her? Let me just put her name in the sentence and then see what it sounds like, okay? So, yet Eve will be saved through childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control. So how would, if that's the proper antecedent to she, how does that affect the text? What would be your interpretation?
What has the actions of they got to do with Eve? I mean, they is plural, so is she going
to... Well, so who would the they be? If we say it's Eve, let's put Eve just for a second. Let's just say it's Eve, right? Well, I'll just accept that for a second. You don't have to hold on to it after class. You can take another meeting. But just for right now, what if you said it's Eve, right? Who would the they then have to be? I think it'd be her children. I think it has to be her children. If they, because it says she'll be saved in childbearing, right? Childbearing, if they continue. So, okay. Yes, and I would agree with that because our salvation is not dependent on our children. I think some people can say, thank the good Lord, right? I think Hezekiah would agree with that, right? Who am I trying to think of? Samuel would agree with that. Do you have your hand up, Aaliyah?
I was just going to say the same thing. It's like if she was Eve and they were talking about her children, then it would say she would be saved through her children, which doesn't.
Okay. So if they referred to her children, I can see a problem with that. So that's one possibility. All right. Now, like Neil mentioned, what if the they... Okay, we're still sticking with Eve as she, and the they are Adam and Eve. Again, what are you putting her salvation dependent on? On Adam, right? Can a wife be saved and her husband not? I mean, sadly, that happens. And thankfully for those wives, that their salvation is not dependent on their husband, and vice versa, right? So I think that's also a problem. So that's one way to interpret she. Let me make it a little more complex for just a second. So let's continue with Eve as the she. Let's say the word is not saved, but the proper interpretation is preserved. I'm going to add another little cog in our transmission here. Let's see if we can get it running. All right. What if it is, let me reread it as preserved, okay? Yet Eve will be preserved through childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control. Could that work? Anybody have a difficulty with that one? Okay, let me reread it. And this is if the word should be translated preserved rather than saved. Yet Eve will be preserved through childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control. All right, I think that works pretty well. I think that's an interpretation that I could live with, right?
It makes sense because it's not saying her soul is dependent on it, but it's saying the knowledge of her, I guess you could say, or like her place in who she was or anything is preserved because of, you know, what her lineage did.
Absolutely. Dwayne.
Just to throw it off a little more, my translation has women, not woman.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to that. So hold on to that. We're going to try that one out too, right? So hold on just a second on that one. So I think that one, I could see that work in the text and it not violate the text, right? There's no problems doctrinally with what's going on. That's a possibility. And what I have to tell you is in translation, this is where it gets a little difficult. Right, when you've got two words and you're trying to decide should it be saved or preserved, this is what the translators have to battle with. What do I put there when this word could mean either thing? So words have a range of meaning. And so just something for us to think about. All right, so that's Eve. Let's now try the other translation. Let's say it's women. Okay, let's go to 15 and let's read it that way. All right, yet women will be saved through childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control. All right, does that work? I think that works. Think about it for a minute. How are we saved? I think in all those ways, faith, love, and holiness. That's what saves us. I think that works. I think that's a good possibility for that translation, that the she could be women just in general. And it doesn't violate text in any way. Yes, ma'am.
I think what my brain held up on is actually the use of the word through.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yes, that's the word continue. The other, thank you for saying that. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's back after saved. Let me talk about through in just a minute, because I'm glad you... My brain skipped over that term. That's another wrinkle. We can add to all this. That's another word that has some difficulty in translation, is the word through. So let me hold that just for a second. All right, so... And then let's go back to our example. What if we change the word saved to preserve, with women being the antecedent to the pronoun she, okay? So, yet women will be preserved through childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control. Now, I think this option, if this is the correct one, actually gives us a few different ways to interpret this with the they that comes after the if. So, I think the if in that scenario could be the women. It could also be their offspring. And I think it would work. Yet the women will be preserved through childbearing if they, the children, continue in faith, love, and holiness. What does it say? It says they are childbearing. So the whole thing is about giving birth to your offspring. That's why, that's the connection. And so I think that's a possibility. I think it could be that way. And it could also relate to the women. Now let me say one more thing about the through. And we'll talk about what I think the best interpretation is. So anybody have the word by? So there where it says, yet she will be saved by childbearing.
Mine says in.
What? It says in childbearing. So some translations have the word by. You will see the word in. What's the best translation? I think the best translation, you can go study it, but I think the best one is through. That her salvation is not dependent on childbearing. Why is that important?
Not everybody bears children.
If your salvation is dependent on your ability to give birth to children, there's going to be some issues with that, aren't there? There are going to be some women like, hey, what about me? That's why I don't think the salvation is dependent on her childbearing. Can a woman who doesn't have children be saved?
Yes.
Absolutely. And that would be a violation of the rest of the text of Scripture. For it to be, for your salvation to be dependent on childbearing. Yes, ma'am. No, you're fine.
I think the through, that's what it was tripping me up with the through, because when I think of through, I think, okay, you're saved through something, as in, this is what is saving you. That interpretation is what was hanging me up, whereas through could also be like during childbearing, and that kind of through the process of it. And that's the difference that was throwing me off.
All right, so let me close by giving you a multifaceted interpretation that you probably won't like. Let me first say, I'm not the translation master, interpreted master, so you continue studying it. But I think there's actually two ways to interpret this that work really well. One we haven't mentioned, and I'll bring it up. I think what Paul is doing here is he's been pretty tough on women. Go read those previous two. He just said, you're subservient, you're submissive to men because, number one, he was born first, and because you were deceived, not him. I actually think what Paul is doing here is saying, but let me point out something glorious for women. I heard Ben Shapiro say this once, and I think it's true. I think that childbearing is a female superpower. Now, I know it's not really miraculous. I'm not trying to say it's miraculous. But women can do something men cannot do.
Superpower.
Yeah. I'm using that term just illustratively. That he's saying women, the continuation of humankind is dependent on you. Right, you get to do something that men cannot do, and that's something that should not be underappreciated. And so, in a sense, she is preserved. How? Through her children. A man's legacy is what? If a man has a legacy, what's he striving to, what's his legacy going to be according to him? Probably his work for most men. I'm talking generalities. But men will leave some work behind. They want to be known for something. Again, I'm using generalities. I know this isn't all women. But I think for most women, it's their children. Their legacy is their children. If you go back and read Psalm 31, that beautiful text, Solomon, I believe it's Solomon, is writing about his mom, Bathsheba. And that beautiful text about all the ways he praises her. And he talks about her children. Her children are her glory. Mm-hmm. What did I say? Sorry. Sometimes the brain wires don't connect. It's Proverbs 31. Thank you, Doug, for correcting me. Proverbs 31. There's something to that. And so in a general way, I think what Paul is saying is, women, what you do in childbearing and rearing your children is something that is glorious. Now, I think there's two layers to this. I think there's an even deeper thing to this. You go back to the previous verse. He says that it was the woman deceived and not the man. And that's true. Genesis chapter 3. But it is equally true that it was a woman chosen by God to bring into this world the Savior of mankind. And men had nothing to do with it. It was all women. And so God gave women the opportunity to bring the Savior. If you look at Galatians 4 and verse 4, it's Galatians 4 and verse 4, this is what Paul says about the Savior. Galatians 4, 4, but when the fullness of time had come, when God was ready, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. The beautiful plan of God to take that which was broken and to give it a new purpose. What had been broken in the garden was renewed to the birth of Jesus. And so I think there are echoes of that here in 1 Timothy 2 and verse 15. So that would be my two ways to interpret what Paul is trying to say. All right. Any other comments? Y'all got real quiet. All right, that's how I look at it. You go and study it. You don't have to take my word for it. Maybe I got it all wrong. That's the way I'm looking at it. All right, nothing else. We'll go to chapter 3. Now let's go to chapter 3, and I guess I could catch up here, right? So we close out chapter 2. He spoke to the sound message. He's spoken to the sound membership. And now he, in chapter 3, as he continues this concept of sound members, he's going to go to the leadership of the local congregation. All right, let's read verses 1 through 7. So 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 7. The text says, "The saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of overseer, he desires a noble task. Therefore, an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not a drunkard, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders, so that he may not fall into disgrace, into the snare of the devil." All right. Spend just a few minutes here on this particular text. I bet when I read verse 1 and verse 2, some of your translations had the word bishop. Am I right? Some of y'all have bishops there. We've noted this before, but just to quickly note it again, those terms are used for the same group of men. There are actually six terms used for these group of men, all for different reasons, but all referring to the same group. The terms are overseer, bishop, but tell me the other ones.
Shepherd
or pastor,
elder
and presbyter. All six terms. Do you know how many actual terms we have in the Greek for all six of those? We have three. We have three base terms. Why do we have six English terms? Bible translations, transliteration. Those terms, when you look at them, bishop and overseer, in the Greek, same term. You can use those terms interchangeably. We have two bishops here. We also have two overseers here. Same two men. We also have two shepherds. Or, as the Latin term, we have two pastors. That comes from the Latin, not from the Greek. But it is the word that refers to shepherd. And then, we also can refer to them as elders. I was going to make a joke, but I guess I might get in trouble. Maybe because they're older. But elders, and the same term is, the actual Greek term is presbyteros, which is why we get the term presbyter. And so that's just a transliteration of the Greek term presbyteros. All those refer to the elders, not to a preacher, not to any other office that man has conceived of. Those six terms. You can see all six of those in a few passages. You can go to the book of Acts, chapter 20. As Paul is meeting with the Ephesian elders, verses 17 and following, he uses all three terms. Remember, it's three terms in Greek and six terms in English. And you can also go to 1 Peter, chapter 5. Peter also uses all three terms to refer to elders. So, just want to note that. So, number one, am I a pastor? No, not a pastor. Been called that. Asked to not be called that, but I am not. A pastor is the same thing as an elder. Okay, so that's number one. So what about elders? If you go to the book of Acts and chapter 14, everybody, if you'll go to Acts 14 just for a moment. To get into Acts 14, what's going on here? What's going on in Acts 14?
Are they on their second missionary journey?
Second missionary journey. Yes, Paul, on his first missionary journey, went where? Anybody tell me where was the first area he went to? Y'all know this. Come on. No. Galatia. That's right. Galatia. The book of Galatians. Who was he writing that to? He's writing that to the churches that were established on his first missionary journey. So some of those places would be places like Derbe and Lystra and Iconium. As you get to chapter 14, he comes back through. Notice what he's doing. Go down to verse 23. Somebody read Acts 14, 23.
When they had appointed elders for them in every church, having prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed.
So they were coming back through Derbe, Lystra, Iconium. And what were they doing in each of these locations? They were appointing elders, plural, in every place. If you go to Titus, go to Titus's letter. In verse 5, what does Paul say to Titus? What was his purpose in leaving him in Crete? To appoint elders, what does it say exactly? Titus 1:5. For this reason, I left you at Crete to
set in order the things that are wanted and to ordain elders in every city.
In every city. I needed that part.
Oh, okay.
And he didn't just appoint them in one location, right? In every city, every place there was a group of believers, what did he do? What did he want Titus to do? To appoint elders. Congregations of the Lord's church to be properly organized, as the Bible says, it needs to have its own eldership. That's what Paul did. That's what he commanded Titus to do as well. So that's what they were doing in these different locations. It's the same kind of work he has Timothy doing in his work. So let's go back to Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 3. Let's note here real quickly. He gives us a list. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on each of these, but I did want to mention them at least. The qualifications that he gives of elders. Okay? So These come out of the English Standard. I know we can talk a little bit about different word usages depending on your translation, but what's the first thing he notes? Well, that's he actually mentions one thing right before that. You're right in the list, but the first thing he mentions is he desires. Desire is the first thing. Now, this can be tricky, depending on how you see this. When he says one who desires to be an elder desires a noble task, what's he saying to us?
It's a very honorable task for you to want it.
Yes, it is.
And
that a man who serves should understand that is a noble task. I know what they're doing. They're going around those poles downstairs and don't realize how loud it is up here. When that metal, you know, that sound just travels right up. It's a good conductor of electricity and of sound. But he says the first thing is desires. Now, that needs to be careful with that, right? We do need to ask why he desires it, right? If he desires it as a noble responsibility, that's a good thing. But if he desires it for what? For power or filthy gain, that wouldn't be so good. And so he desires a noble task. Elders should have that desire in themselves. But we should inculcate that or teach that to our young men, that being an elder is a good thing. Far too often men get older and they see it as a burden. Now, could it be tough to be an elder at times? Absolutely. But we should be teaching and talking like this is a good work of God. This is not something to be seen as a burden. And so he says desire. And then as Aaliyah mentioned, oh yes, ma'am.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I guess this also seems to read that people shouldn't be appointed as, or men shouldn't be appointed as elders against their will.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you won't cause some trouble. Try to force a man into the job that he doesn't want. But again, I think that's very true. Again, though, I think we need to go back and teach our men that it's a good thing. You should want to do this to serve. Yes, ma'am. Do you have your hand raised?
No.
Oh. So, first thing is desire, and then we'll come back to Leah's point next week to get started, that he ought to be a man above reproach. And we'll go through each of these. And we'll look at deacons as well. Again, thank you all for being here and spending this time in study. We'll go ahead and dismiss now and rejoin for our devotional in just a moment. Thank you.